I'm Daniel Murphy, Associate Professor of History, and you're listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Welcome to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Riches, the regional initiative for collecting the histories, experiences, and stories of Central Florida, is an umbrella program housing interdisciplinary public history projects that bring together different departments at the University of Central Florida with profit and nonprofit sectors of the community in order to promote the collection and preservation of the region's history. By facilitating research that records and presents the stories of communities, businesses, and institutions in Central Florida, Riches seeks to provide the region with a deeper sense of its heritage. This series will feature a podcast every 2 weeks, in the middle and at the end of each month, that will explore various aspects of Central Florida history. In today's episode, Central Florida Without the Theme Parks, an interview with Dr. Benjamin Brotmarkle, we explore the rich history of Central Florida before Disney by speaking with Dr. Benjamin Brotmarkle, author of Beyond the Theme Parks, Exploring Central Florida.
Hello, you are listening to an interview with Dr. Benjamin Brotmarkle. In this podcast, Dr. Brotmarkle will discuss the inspiration behind his book, Beyond the Theme Parks, Exploring Central Florida. He will specifically highlight some of the region's more culturally significant attractions and also assess what these sites can tell us about Central Florida's pre-Disney past. Our interview commenced by Dr. Brotmarkle elaborating on his professional background and motives for research.
What led me to the topic for my first book, Beyond the Theme Parks, Exploring Central Florida, it really came out of my work at WMFE, the public broadcasting stations in Orlando. And I worked there for over 13 years. I had a weekly radio magazine called The Arts Connection. There was an hour-long look at local history, culture, and the arts community. And I did a series of television documentaries as well while I was there for Channel 24. And during that time, doing interviews throughout the community, I often heard that the community had shallow historical roots and that there was no sense of community, and people complained about these things. But talking to different people involved in historic preservation efforts and cultural efforts, I saw that that really wasn't true. It's just that people didn't really know that much about the history of the area or what was going on as far as these types of events. So I decided that I would take a lot of the interviews I'd collected over the years and put them together in a project called Beyond the Theme Parks. And the book actually started as my master's thesis. I got my Master of Liberal Studies degree from Rollins College. Once I got the degree, I added to it a little bit more, and then eventually it was published by University Press of Florida. But the main objective was to demonstrate to people that, in fact, there is a lot of history in the area. So each chapter in the book is a different town in the Central Florida area, but it tells the history of each town, but also things you can go and enjoy today, historic sites, historic events with a tie to local history. And that was very important, that people could go out and experience history today.
I asked Dr. Brotmarkle which sites he felt were most emblematic of the region in general.
One of the greatest history and humanities-based festivals that we have in the area is the Zora Neale Hurston Festival of the Arts and Humanities, which has been going on for, over 20 years now. I think they're going to have their 22nd annual coming up. But the story of how the festival started is really an interesting look at how the history of the area kind of helped protect against urban sprawl. The town of Eatonville, on its 100th anniversary in 1987, was in danger of being demolished. Orange County wanted to put a four-lane highway right through the center of the town. And one of the residents of the town, N.Y. Nethery, started a group called PEC, the Association to Preserve the Eatonville Community. And they fought Orange County and won and kept Kennedy Boulevard from becoming a four-lane highway. And they used the history of the town, which is so important because Eatonville is the first incorporated African-American municipality in the United States entirely governed by African-Americans, which is incredibly historically significant. And the fact that writer, folklorist, and anthropologist Zora Neale Hurston claimed Eatonville as her hometown was another big selling point. She's probably most famous for her novel Their Eyes Were Watching God from 1937, which tells the story of Janie Crawford and her efforts at self-realization. And really, like much of Hurston's writing, gives us a good idea of what Eatonville was like at the turn of the last century. And it's no surprise that the people of Eatonville today want to focus on not only the history of the town, but the contributions of Zora Neale Hurston for this really wonderful event. Tens of thousands of people come to the Zora Neale Hurston Festival of the Arts every year to hear about not only Hurston and her work, but her Harlem Renaissance contemporaries. There is a street festival portion. There's academic panel discussions. There's music and food and just a really great event based around local history. Probably one that is most emblematic of the region in general would be the Barberville Pioneer Festival that's held the first weekend in November every year. And the Barberville is an interesting town, too. It's a little town in the middle of nowhere. And in fact, you can drive right by it and not even know you passed it if you don't realize you're driving through Barberville. But what's there is the Pioneer Settlement for the Creative Arts. And what they've done there is to bring buildings that were in danger of being torn down elsewhere and brought them to this park and created a living history village. At the center of the park is the only indigenous building, which is a 1919 schoolhouse. But around it, they brought in a post office, a railroad depot, some cracker houses, a church, all sorts of buildings that were, as I say, in danger of being torn down. But this Pioneer Festival that's held the first weekend in November at Barberville is a really incredible look into Florida's past and the types of buildings that were built and the skills that the pioneers had to have to survive are demonstrated. And it's really quite an event. One other event that has a lot of historic and cultural significance, just this past year, the Winter Park Bach Festival celebrated its 75th anniversary. It's one of the oldest Bach festivals in the nation, and it's presented at Rollins College in the historic Knowles Memorial Chapel, and is really quite an amazing event as well. It's not just the music of Bach, but many other composers as well are featured, and it's been going on for three quarters of a century.
I next asked Dr. Brotmarkle what these attractions and festivals could tell us about Central Florida's past.
Well, certainly the Barberville Fall Festival shows us how people made a living. The citrus industry, of course, was extremely important, but the cattle industry was Florida's number one industry for many, many years. The Spanish were the first to bring domesticated cattle to Florida back in the 1500s, and then Native Americans in the area took over domesticating the cattle, and then when white settlers came in the 1800s, they took over the cattle industry, and it was Florida's number one industry for many years, and is still a major industry in Florida. The Zora Neale Hurston Festival of the Arts and Humanities, as I said, reflects the amazing history of Eatonville, which is getting ready to celebrate its 125th anniversary in 2012. But it's an amazing story that just after the Civil War, here's a town that's incorporated by black people and run entirely by black people. And the Winter Park Bach Festival celebrates music that wasn't indigenous to Florida, but shows that there was culture here, you know, long before. I think people think that there was no culture before Disney, but this was in place long before that. All of these festivals can tell us so much about Florida's past. And there's other events at Fort Christmas Historic Park and around the area that do this as well.
Our conversation then turned to the topic of tourism, specifically those elements that existed before the arrival of Disney. I asked Dr. Brotmarkle whether he felt Florida's earliest tourist ventures were reminiscent of the Deep South or perhaps something different.
Well, I don't think that the pre-Disney tourist experience really reflects the Deep South. It was more of a people trying to find some sort of escapism. There was always this quest to find something different. In fact, in the 1800s, when people first really started coming here as tourists, it was almost like going on an African safari or something. People would come here and they'd ride the river boats along the St. John's, for example. They would hunt and fish. And that would be a large part of this experience. Other people came here seeking better health because of the humid weather, and they really felt that it had medicinal properties. So I don't think it was a Deep South experience as much as it was an exotic experience to come here and see different animals and different wildlife, different flora and fauna. Then, of course, you have the railroad come in, and Henry Flagler was known for trying to build up communities around the stops, so there'd be something for the tourists to go and experience and enjoy, big luxury hotels, and eventually took his railroad all the way out to the Keys. Again, though, it was people looking for something different, not so much reminiscent of the Deep South. In fact, when some of the more kitschy roadside attractions started developing, there was a nod at some of them. You know, they dress women up in the Southern Belle outfits, for example. at Cypress Gardens, but they'd be escorted by Spanish conquistadors, you know, so it was kind of an interesting mix of history there. But again, it was water skiers and the flora and fauna were the things that were focused on, and Wikiwachi, an early attraction, had the mermaids and was very popular in the 1950s. Much like Disney is kind of a fantasy experience, I think that's just more of a continuation of what had already been happening with tourists in Florida. It was just a continuation of that trend that had already started here.
We next talked about some of the distinctive features that would have characterized Central Florida in the years preceding Disney's arrival.
Central Florida has been enveloped in this kind of urban sprawl, but pre-Disney, Winter Park was a distinctly separate town from Orlando, which was a distinctly separate town from Eatonville and Maitland, all of these places that you drive through and you're surrounded nonstop by buildings and neighborhoods and development, were actually very separate towns with woods and in between, and it would take a while to get from one to the other. So I think that's one thing, just the wide open space would be a distinguishing feature.
Dr. Brookmarkle then expounded on some of the transformations Central Florida has undergone in recent decades.
I think the agricultural base and the cattle industry have changed, and that's probably the most radical transformation. A lot of these farms and areas that were used to graze cattle, those people have had to adapt. A lot of them have just sold off a lot of the property. A lot of them have had to try to figure out new ways to use what land they have. And a lot of those families are still around. A lot of them are less involved in the cattle industry. They're producing sod or have turned to real estate development, building up neighborhoods, but they've had to adapt and change as Central Florida has changed. And certainly Disney has been probably the biggest catalyst for change in our area.
Following this response, I asked Dr. Brookmarkle about the ways in which Central Florida has managed to retain a sense of its historical roots.
Well, I think some of the festivals and historic sites that have been preserved are some of the ways that Central Florida's past has managed to stick around. Some of the institutions like Stetson University and Rollins College have preserved a lot of the past. Again, events like the Zora Neale Hurston Festival, the Barberville Fall Pioneer Festival, the Winter Park Bach Festival, preserve our culture, preserve our history for people that have been here a long time and newcomers as well, to give them a feel of what Central Florida's past was like. Some of the roadside attractions that we've talked about have managed to stick around. So that's another way that Central Florida's past is preserved as well.
At the conclusion of our interview, Dr. Brookmarkle elaborated upon some of the more intriguing finds that he discovered throughout his research.
Central Florida's past is just so amazing to me. It never ceases to amaze me to look at all of the different rich elements of Florida history. For example, well, the Wendover Dig in North Brevard County in Titusville. As they were building the Wendover Farm subdivision in the early 1980s, there was a backhoe operator named Steve Vanderjack who was using his backhoe next to a pond to clear out a new road, and he saw a skull that he had uncovered. And of course, the police were called in, and once they determined it wasn't a mass murder site or something, they called in some anthropologists who were thinking, well, you know, these remains might be as much as 400 years old or so. It might be an Indian burial ground or something. But carbon dating tests were done, and these remains were determined to be between 7,000 and 8,000 years old. And they did an archaeological dig there and uncovered hundreds of remarkably well-preserved remains. These people had been ritualistically buried, wrapped in the oldest woven fabric found in North America. Not only their skeletons were amazingly intact because of this anaerobic peat bog that they'd been buried in, but their brain matter was intact. In 91 of the skulls was intact brain matter, and sometimes complete brain. So they were able to do DNA tests and determine the familial relationships between these people and see that it had been used as this burial ground by the same tribe for over 100 years, hundreds of years. So just to give it some perspective, these people were burying their dead there over 3,000 years before King Tut, a couple thousand years before the Great Pyramid was built in Egypt. So hugely ancient, right here in Central Florida. So all kinds of rich history. We could talk for days about all of these individual stories, but there is an incredibly rich history here, and there are a lot of people and organizations and communities that are trying to preserve that history with physical sites, that you can visit today, cultural events, festivals that celebrate this history and help you to experience it today.
You've been listening to an interview with Dr. Benjamin Brotmarkle. We hope you have enjoyed, and thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Feel free to contact us with any questions or comments on the program that you just heard. Please join us for the next episode, Hamilton Holt and Rollins College, Old Fangled Education.